CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded September 20th, 2023. Well, yesterday, the American president took the podium at the United Nations to perform his annual liturgical duty, repeating the lies and hypocrisies defining his nation. Yes, the United States is, as it wreaks havoc across the planet, really keen for a world where, quote, our children do not go hungry and everyone has access to quality healthcare, where workers are empowered and our environment is protected, where conflicts are resolved peacefully and countries can chart their own course. Well, if that doesn't bring the bile to your mouth, you need to know more about what America does to countries who try charting their own course, especially if that course includes feeding the hungry, providing health care to the sick, and empowering workers. There are many examples to choose from, including Nicaragua, a nation that has felt the Yankee boot on its neck for very nearly two centuries. Jeremy Kuzmarov is a journalist and author who also serves as managing editor at covertactionmagazine.com. His book titles include Obama's Unending Wars and The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano. His latest article at CAM, Biden Has Relaunched Reagan's Murderous War Against Nicaraguan Democracy, How Many Is He Willing to Kill to Win?, examines America's ongoing campaign against the country that still will not bend a knee to empire. Jeremy Kuzmarov in the first half, and America's persistent historical interference in Nicaragua and its more recent machinations in Ukraine differ only in scale. And though the ruination being made out of the latter is fast becoming total, still the NATO alliance and its international collaborators say push on. Dimitri Lascaris is a Montreal-based activist, journalist, and lawyer. He served as justice critic in the shadow cabinet of the Green Party of Canada and likewise for the Green Party of Quebec. Dimitri's interviews for TRNN are at therealnews.com. Dimitri's articles appear at various sites online and at his website, dimitrilascaris.org, where I found his latest piece, Ukraine's Worst Enemies Are Those Who Demand Russia's Strategic Defeat. Dimitri Lascaris and Ukraine's friends like these in the second half. But first, Jeremy Kuzmarov and Biden riding the legacy of Reagan in Nicaragua. Welcome back to the show, Jeremy.
My pleasure to be here.
Well, it's always great to speak with you, of course. Now, Jeremy, from Carter to Reagan and Bush to Biden, Nicaragua has been America's second favorite punching bag, I would argue. But before getting to the latest manifestation of that aggression, can we look further back in history, as your article does, to those early or the first instances of U.S. interference there?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a long pattern. I think people forget the history, including people who are more on the liberal left. And, you know, I think they went along with the narrative that Daniel Ortega was some kind of tyrant, and they were supporting these kind of the protests that developed against him in 2018. But I think it's instructive to take a long historical view of U.S. involvement in Nicaragua. And I mean, Ortega was, a symbolic of resistance to U.S. imperialism in Nicaragua and has a huge amount of legitimacy in the country. And I mean, since he's come back, he was the leader of the Sandinista Revolution in 1979. He's like George Washington of his country. And, since he came back to power in 2007, he's enacted a lot of social programs to really benefit the population, and the economic indicators have improved a lot under his presidency. And I think Nicaragua, was voted the most peaceful country in the world. People feel most at peace. There's just this long history of U.S. Intervention that goes back to the late 19th century when the U.S. was trying to build the canal. And, the canal was going to benefit American interests, and Nicaraguans ultimately resisted that. And they built it in Panama, and the U.S. Basically staged an independence movement, secessionist movement within Colombia, so they could build the canal in Panama. They created the nation of Panama, and Nicaragua, the U.S. Marine would intervene like in the early 20th century to install leaders that did the bidding of U.S. business interests, like Brown Brothers, major Wall Street firm, became Brown Brothers Harriman, and Avril Harriman was a key figure in the leading U.S. foreign policy in the early Cold War, and that was his Wall Street firm, Brown Brothers Harriman, and they basically for a long period I think controlled the major all the banks in Nicaragua, and they would help finance revolutions to install leaders that were pliable, and the Marine would be called in to suppress any revolts against those puppet leaders. And you have some heroic figures in Nicaraguan history like Benjamin Zeledon and Augusto Cesar Sandino, who battled the U.S. Marines. And the Sandinistas, took the name of Augusto Cesar Sandino, and he had been killed in the 30s by Anastasio Somoza, who established a family dynasty backed by the United States. So Ortega is a living symbol of resistance. And, people who are progressive, anti-imperialist should support him and should support the sovereignty of Nicaragua. And those protests in 2018 were financed in part by the National Endowment for Democracy. And they were designed to overthrow the Sandinistas and install a government that would be pliable to the United States and institute neoliberal economic policies and revert to the past when Nicaragua's economy was dominated by U.S. multinational corporations and banks like Brown Brothers.
Well, and I really get this reading the article. And again, it's Biden has relaunched Reagan's murderous war against Nicaraguan democracy. How many is he willing to kill to win? This idea of historical loops, you mentioned some of the early figures, and you say that the original interference, the American interference with the Nicaraguan domestic policies and their fate goes right back to the Monroe Doctrine. And I didn't realize until reading your article that this is an anniversary. So happy anniversary, Jeremy, to the Monroe Doctrine's 200th birthday right now. And we see it playing out as alive today in Ukraine as it was in 1823 in Latin America.
Well, that's true. Yeah, the Monroe Doctrine, it was framed in anti-imperialist rhetoric because, it was written at a time that you had the Bolivarian Revolution in South America and countries were fighting for their liberation from Spanish colonialism. But the Monroe Doctrine, framed it that the United States would help uphold Latin America's independence against European imperialism, but really it provided the basis for now 200 years of U.S. interference in Latin America to a more indirect form of colonialism than the European powers, but nevertheless very insidious, with the underlying goal of exploiting the natural resources of the continent, which are very rich, and manipulating political affairs to the advantage of the U.S., often at the expense of the local population. And yeah, Nicaragua is just one country that has suffered as a result of those policies. And yeah, I was reading a book because in Guatemala there were elections recently, and the victor, his father, victor named Arvelo, and his father, Bernardo, is the first name, and his father, Juan Jose Arvelo, who had been a Nicaraguan leader in the 40s and 50s, who the CIA actually blocked from coming back to power after the famous coup in Guatemala in 1954, overthrew democracy. And he wrote a book when he was in exile called The Shark and the Sardines, and he reviews some of the same history as Dan Kovalik, who wrote this book that my article was based on, this history of Nicaragua and its resistance. And yeah, the metaphor is a good one of a shark and sardine, the shark just eating up the sardines. And Arvelo in that book, emphasizes that the U.S. government was basically taken over by a clique of millionaires who were intent on exploiting Latin American natural resources and repeatedly sent in the Marines to enforce U.S. business interests and really kept many Latin American countries impoverished and benefited the United States.
Yeah, but there's so much money to be made. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Jeremy Kuzmarov. Jeremy's a journalist and author. He also serves as managing editor at covertactionmagazine.com. His book titles include Obama's Unending Wars and The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano. We're talking today around his article, Biden has relaunched Reagan's murderous war against Nicaraguan democracy. How many is he willing to kill to win? And yeah, the article is based largely, or I don't know how largely, you can tell me perhaps, on Dan Kovalik's book, Nicaragua, A History of U.S. Intervention. Dan's been on this show many times talking about that and as many other books too. I'm looking at a picture, and the history is so rich, and the circles just keep coming around and around, and they are so instructive to what we see today. But especially interested in an early president of Nicaragua, Jose Santos Zelaya, and he was painted in terms that we would find very familiar today before he was overthrown. I'm looking at a photo of him right now, and I'm just curious, I don't know if you know this, but is he related to the Zelaya of Honduran fame, the president that was coup'd in, I think it was 2008 or 9.
Well, yeah, that was a 2009 coup supported by the Obama administration, and that led to Honduras being transformed into a narco state. I mean, I don't think there's a direct relation, but the history, yeah, repeats itself 100 years later. It's a very similar history.
Oh, they look very similar. I'm looking at this lino print of him, and he looks quite a lot like Zelaya of Honduran fame.
There is a relation. I don't know about that, but
you write about how Zelaya, the Nicaraguan president, this is in the 1890. I'm looking at the Harper Weekly's picture that you included in your article from 1895, but he was painted in the American press as well. Maybe you can describe it.
Well, he was demonized in the media. You know, we've seen a familiar pattern where any leader that crosses the United States is just pilloried in the media. So whether it's Maduro, whether it's Putin, whether it's, Gaddafi, whether it was Castro, whether it was Zelaya 100 years ago, it's the same story. And oftentimes these leaders are among the best leaders in their country's history, or authentic nationalist leaders, but they've crossed the United States, so they're demonized, and that is part of the regime change operation. It's a psychological warfare operation targeting the American public to get them to support U.S. foreign policy objectives and regime change operations. And that's what occurred. And with Zelaya, he was ultimately overthrown. And he was trying to develop Nicaragua's economy for Nicaragua, and had attempted to partner with Japan to build a canal, and threatened to revoke gold mining concessions that had been granted to close friends of Philander Knox, President William Howard Taft's Secretary of State. And that resulted in the regime change operation in which he was removed from power. They depicted Zelaya as, that he was carrying out a reign of terror, and he was a medieval despot. He was overthrown, and he was succeeded by a accountant of the La Luz Mining Company, and he gave the gold concessions to Knox, and Knox got further rich, and Taft benefited, and then the Marines were sent in to crush a rebellion against Diaz's corrupt government, and it was led by Benjamin Zeledon, who's a national hero in Nicaragua, and then ultimately Sandino took up arms against the Marine. Smedley Butler was the truth teller and said that Marine intervention was rotten to its core and is really designed to protect the investment of these wealthy American plutocrats.
Yeah, Butler is famous now perhaps for his tract, War is a Racket. You see it quoted quite frequently on the internet. You know that Biden was at the United Nations yesterday addressing, as I mentioned in the introduction, the General Assembly. And thinking about Zelaya here in Nicaragua, yesterday Biden said, and I'll quote him, "Our children..." He wants a world where our children do not go hungry and everyone has access to quality health care, where workers are empowered and our environment is protected, where conflicts are resolved peacefully and countries can chart their own course. And I was thinking of Zelaya when I was reading that, because you, in your article, say that his crime in the eyes of the United States, unforgivable, was that he was building roads and ports and railways and more than 140 schools. And he was devoting, it seems, the treasury to the people of Nicaragua, and that could not be brooked by the United States then, and it seems it can't still be.
Yeah, I mean, you can compare him to current. Well, I mean, compare him to Ortega, because Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua is continuing his legacy and trying to develop Nicaragua for Nicaraguans. And if you compare his record, he's done a lot for the country, and they've built a lot of hospital infrastructure, schools, literacy rates have improved dramatically. And especially compare him to his predecessor, his neoliberal predecessor, I believe was put in jail for a long time for corruption and had misruled the country. So, there's a good comparison right there. And the Biden administration, like the Trump administration, are trying to undermine Ortega and promote regime change. And they imposed deadly sanctions on Nicaragua, including the gold mining sector. The National Endowment for Democracy was supporting anti-regime activists. They spread disinformation and propaganda about the Ortega government. And there are other governments like his that are similarly targeted for regime change. And I could give many examples. One is, Venezuela. The Maduro government was continuing the legacy of Hugo Chavez, who cut poverty dramatically in Venezuela and pushed for the nationalization of the oil and use of oil revenues to uplift the economy and to develop social programs for the poor and to finance education and health care. And was even subsidizing oil and heating in homes in Boston, Massachusetts with Citgo. And then you can look overseas, a government like Belarus under Lukashenko was targeted by regime change operations and color revolution by the United States. And that was a socialist government in Belarus that the World Bank praised for having the lowest inequality and lowest poverty rates of any country in Eastern Europe, and even fared very well compared to Western European countries, especially in terms of inequality levels. We're very low in Belarus, and low unemployment and good literacy, because you have a government investing in education. Now, I mean, the government is not perfect. I wouldn't suggest that that's a perfect government. Neither is Venezuela, but they are authentic nationalistic governments that are and are trying to do a lot for their people. And those are the governments that the U.S. is trying to overthrow. And, same way the Cuban government. I mean, Cuba under that government has since the Castro came in. I mean, firstly, the country reclaimed its pride from years where it was a weak country that had been subjected to U.S. neocolonial interference, didn't control its own resources or economy. They reasserted since the Castro Revolution, they've reasserted control over their own economy, and they've established the pride of the people by standing up for themselves and standing up to outside interference. And they've been able to, they invested heavily in healthcare. They developed a very good healthcare system. They sent doctors into Africa and other developing world countries to help out there. So there are, tremendous accomplishments. And the U.S. has tried to undermine that because it's a good example. The U.S. wants to control the so-called global south, and wants to enable them to be playground for U.S. multinational corporations. They could exploit their resources. And the Cuban model is a danger because they nationalized their economy and restricted the influence of foreign corporations or entirely excluded them. So they have to make sure to punish Cuba. That's why they impose a draconian embargo on Cuba, and they impose these harsh sanctions on Venezuela and Nicaragua and Belarus, and they try and overthrow those governments or at least make wreck the economy and make them look like failures. They've done this for years to North Korea, and they spread propaganda, some of it absurd, about North Korea. But that regime has endured because there's a lot of legitimacy, and people see it as an authentic government that is, you know, trying to uplift the society, and that has stood up to these predatory outside powers, and they're proud. Their pride has been established. So, yeah, there's a very clear pattern at play, and unfortunately, the propaganda within the United States prevents a lot of the people from understanding clearly how their country operates in foreign affairs. I think even the education system skews it. It's all muddled, and U.S. motives are made to appear benevolent. And though it's admitted that there are a few mistakes, or sometimes things go too far, like a Vietnam war, very rarely is the pattern analyzed objectively, and the predatory behavior called out and exposed. Because if more people understood, I don't think most of the population really would want to be behaving in that way. They would find accommodation with governments that have different economic model, and there are means that the U.S. can still benefit economically through trade without exploiting a country, and I think most Americans would favor that. And I think Americans are very have a lot of ingenuity as far as technology and entrepreneurship. So I think as a whole, the U.S. economy doesn't need to be imperialistic to be successful, but it's a narrow elite that benefits off the plunder of the third world, and they drive these criminal policies.
What differentiates the United States and these other countries is a sense of history, and that comes out clearly in your article. And again, it's Biden has relaunched Reagan's murderous wars against Nicaraguan democracy. How many is he willing to kill to win? I'm old enough to remember what happened in the 1980s in Nicaragua and elsewhere in the region, the bloody, dirty wars of the Reagan and Bush years. But the people there in Venezuela today, the Chavistas, well, they follow Simon Bolivar. In this country, in Nicaragua, the Sandinistas follow Augusto Cesar Sandino. They remember, even if the Americans don't, people that stood up, and they follow their example, not only to resist the encroachment of the United States, but also to turn their resources and the benefits of those resources development to the people. Today, now, as you mentioned, all this vast array of sanctions that the United States and its allies have imposed around the world, it's all coming back to bite them in the ass, it seems. China is warming relations with Nicaragua and planning, as you mentioned in your article, to finish this alternative to the Panama Canal, which is in dire straits right now because of environmental changes there, and they're losing the supply of water necessary to keep the canal viable. What about this latest incarnation with the Chinese moving in there to develop Nicaragua, much as they've moved into other places despoiled by Western capitalism?
Well, yeah, I think the Chinese are viewed differently because, as you say, people in those regions may have a better historical consciousness than here in the United States, and they may understand that China had been a victim of European colonialism, particularly in the 19th century in the era following the Opium Wars, and that China had reclaimed its sovereignty in the Chinese Revolution of 1949. So China became kind of a symbol. And the U.S. tried to subvert the Chinese Revolution by supporting Chiang Kai-shek in the Chinese Civil War, and then supporting sabotage operations inside China from Taiwan and from Burma. China is viewed as part of the Third World. China went on to support a lot of Third World liberation movements, and now during the Cold War in Africa, for example, and they invested from that time forward in the infrastructure, railway development in Africa and increasingly in Latin America. And this is seen as beneficial. They need some capital, and China, the lending institution that China has established, don't have the same string attached to their loans as like the World Bank and IMF, which push these harsh austerity measures on countries, neoliberalism. And China, you know, has less strings, and they have a history of as an anti-colonial power rather than a colonizer. And there are more, mutual advantages that are being pursued, like with this canal project you're discussing with Nicaragua. And the United States basically is getting jealous, and they see that these countries are turning more and more to China, and that it's a fruitful relationship for both countries. Not to say that the China, can't be exploitive. I mean, they do at times exploit, may be intent on exploiting the mineral wealth of countries as well as any other country. But if you look at it, there's a lot more mutual advantage being pursued in the alliance of a country, say, like Nicaragua and China. And the U.S. is getting jealous, so they're really expanding their economic war in the form of these sanctions, and they're lashing out at China, threatening a war against China. So I think it's just jealousy, and the world is changing, as you say. It's becoming more of a multipolar world order, and Latin America is asserting its independence more and more. I mean, not just Nicaragua, but look at Brazil. There's a clear victory of Lula. I mean, they tried to use all kind of covert means to keep Lula down, and they used a lawfare campaign and these bogus charges against him, bogus corruption charges. And the United States was behind that lawfare campaign because Lula is more of an independent leader, and he's part of the BRICS. And he's part of this trend we see where we have more left-leaning leaders gaining election in Latin America who are more nationalists and are either moving their countries toward closer economic relation with China and toward more independent policy positions from the United States. And there are many examples, like Bolivia, Evo Morales. Of course, the U.S. supported the coup against him, but his party is now back in power, the Socialist Party in Bolivia. Colombia elected a more left-wing leader who may move toward more independence. So far, the U.S. still has all their military base in Colombia, but with this kind of leader, things could change there. Mexico has more independent left-leaning leader. Chile, many countries, and even Guatemala, although he's more of a center-left, but he is the son of Juan José Arvelo, who was Guatemala's leader in the late 40s after a dictator the U.S. had supported named Jorge Ubico. And Arvelo had moved Guatemala toward greater independence and was supporting more worker rights and higher wages. Ultimately, his successor, Arbenz, moved against the United Fruit Company, and that's what led to the famous coup of 54. But the U.S. had a hard time getting away with that, like they could in the 50s, of just overthrowing a leader who was more progressive. And more of these, and that's why they've resorted to very underhanded tactics, like in Brazil with Lula, where they use the court system against him. But he's come back to power after some time in jail. And, Brazil's a big country and powerful country in Latin America. So I think there's a sign that, things are changing and that the U.S. can't get away with what they used to. And look, Ortega survived a long time in power, and Nicaragua is thriving despite the sanctions. So, and Maduro has survived in Venezuela. So the more these countries form trading ties amongst each other and pacts, the more they can further undercut American influence and imperialism, and undercut the negative legacy of the Monroe Doctrine, and pave the way for a new era of more equal relations, and the U.S. will have to adapt.
Well, it's not prepared to do that just now, but we're on the cusp of a whole new world. You can see it in the headlines every day, and the pace is quickening by the moment, it seems. Jeremy, I know we'll speak again in this crazy world that's going on. I'm just looking at your latest article at Covert Action Magazine on the ascension of Hillary Clinton to Columbia University. My word, who wouldn't want to take a course with her? But we'll have to talk about that another time. Thanks a lot for coming on again, Jeremy.
My pleasure.
And I want everyone else to stick around because Dimitri Lascaris is going to come up in the second half, and he's doing a webinar today on cluster bombs and depleted uranium weaponry being sent by the United States into the Ukraine conflict even now. Thanks again, Jeremy.
My pleasure. Thank you.